This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8. We rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. If you have any comments about this show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Your feedback is always welcome. Recently, I had a conversation with DC 37 members who recently returned from Puerto Rico, where they were, along with members of other unions, helping in the recovery efforts. I want to go straight to telling their stories.
Your name is?
Angel Carballo.
And you're with?
I'm with the New York City Department of Environmental Protection.
Okay.
My name is Dave Thomas, and I'm with New York City Department of Environmental Protection.
Milton Velez, New York City Department of Environmental Protection.
I'm Judith Mendez-Maldonado. I'm with the Department of Health as a junior public health nurse.
And you were in Puerto Rico?
How long ago? What day?
About a week ago, from October the 4th to October the 14th.
And how did you, tell me a little bit about how you got, what happened that made you able to go, and what you saw when you got there?
Well, I would see the news every time about Puerto Rico, and I would cry because I'm like, people are suffering, and what are we doing? And when the call went out, the volunteers were needed, and I said, sure, count me in. And I think they told us on Monday, and on Wednesday I was on the plane.
Were you surprised by what you saw when you arrived?
Yes. You know, when you get off usually when you go to Puerto Rico, you get off and you see all the green palm trees. But this time as soon as you landed, you saw everything was brown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything was just brown, and it didn't look like the Puerto Rico that I'm used to seeing because I try to go every year.
Are you're from Puerto Rico? Your family's? No, you're
my family. I have family in Puerto Rico.
And what part of the island is your family?
Aguadilla, the other side of the island. I wasn't able to see them. Aguadilla, Moca.
Anybody else have family on the island?
I also have family in Manatí.
And did you get to see them at all?
I got to see them, but I had to, you know, go on my own to go see them.
And what was it like? What were your impressions when you got there?
Just total devastation. Everything that, you know, my family had, like, we have a farm over there, and all kinds of vegetation that we had. We had, you know, all types of coconut trees, avocado trees, stuff like that, just wiped out completely.
I have to ask this. When you were going there, you imagined what you were going to see. And then when you got there and you saw, did your imagination and the reality, did they mesh, or was it something else?
I mean, I knew it was hit hard because I had spoke to some cousins of mine, but I just wasn't. That's when it really hit me, when I got there. I was like, wow, you know. But the whole island, not only my family, everyone, just complete devastation, like I said.
Your impressions?
Well, number one, I like to help people. So I was glad to volunteer to go and help and do what I can do to help, you know, restore water if we can, or feed people or anything like that. So when I saw it on the news before and CNN and stuff like that, and they said, you know, the storm was bigger than Puerto Rico and all of that, seeing it for myself, it's a reality come through, because the whole, everything was cut. It's like a barber cutting a hair, like everything was down, like light pole, the trees, everything was just down. The country's in a mess. So many garbage on the street side, like just staying there. If an animal is dead, it remains there. No one picked it up. So it was quite a sight to me.
And how long were you there for?
I was there from the 4th to the 14th, 10 days.
And how long did it take for you to actually have something to do in terms of trying to help?
Well, I think maybe the third day, I think. Yeah.
And what were you doing?
Well, the third day, first we was just working inside the Coliseum, gathering stuff for people that, you know, they're giving food for like two families for 7 days and four family like that. Like, so we were just gathering stuff. We were working in the Coliseum on that third day.
What were your impressions?
Well, you know, like Angel, you know, being from there, my mother's still there. You know, she's 3 hours away from where we were stationed. You know, she's in Mayagüez, and, you know, like Angel said, you know, I took the chance and I went on my own time to go visit my mother too. And it, you know, it was heartbreaking not being able to hear her voice or anything until we got there. And you know, the guys came with me, and you know, it was a surprise to her. You know, she cried, I cried, the guys cried with me.
Cried.
And you know, it was just good to see her, and knowing that she didn't have any water, any food, any electric, and everything, and also knowing that no one on the island had that. So, you know, having family there, my mother, you know, she's an elderly woman, and with all her medical conditions, I needed that for my peace, you know, I wanted to help everyone, you know, including my mother and whoever else I could. So, you know, that was the worst part, going to see her. But, you know, we did what we had to do, and we helped other people in her area.
Yes.
We didn't just walk down that dead-end block to where my mother is. We just spread out. You know, there's people next door, people over here, carried water for all the neighbors. The guys were running up and down the street carrying water.
In, five-gallon
in 5 gallon buckets.
Put it in the shopping cart and then delivered water.
And we delivered the water like that. But like she also said, you know, landing in Puerto Rico, you know, we're all talking on a plane until you can actually see land. And it just looks like everything burnt right off the trees. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like brown.
Yeah. Brown.
It was.
Yeah.
You could hear a pin drop on that airplane.
No leaves on the palm tree.
Yeah, it was horrible. And we're ready to go again. I'm pretty sure all four of us are ready to go again.
I'll go again.
Does it surprise you that 76% of the island still has no electricity and that they're still so hard to get water to a large percentage of the population down there now that it's been... I mean, I guess the question I'm asking is the difference between what one can reasonably expect to get done given the destruction versus, like, why isn't it done yet? What do you think about how the efforts are going so far?
It's just hard to get to places, and like I said before, like, the whole, all of Puerto Rico was hit hard. It's just going to take time.
Yeah, we as volunteers, a lot of them broke up in groups, and I'm wondering why they were able to make it to a lot of places that FEMA or other people couldn't get to. And I mean, a lot of people came from California, they came from Michigan, they came from different places, and they were able to make it on a word of mouth and try to get to remote places. So I'm saying, if they don't know Puerto Rico and they're willing to go because of their heart of made of gold, why they were able to go, and the people, the politicians, the government, they haven't been able to go.
Well, you're saying that people were able to figure out on their own how to get to some of the spots that were hardest
if they
hit?
If would have let us, we would have figured out some more. Because, you know, like, we would have gone see his family or my family or his family, and then it was not only their family, but spread out, because that's what we would do. We would knock on doors, give them what we had, help them.
I have family on east of Luquillo, which is east of San Juan. My sense, near Fajardo, my sense is that the western part of the island was hit the hardest. Is that correct, or is that a mistake?
It came from Yubacao, right?
I think the west part was more wind damaged and flooding, and, you know, it wasn't hit as bad as the rest of the island. There wasn't much flooding there. You know, it was just wind damage.
No, but I heard we didn't really go there, so we couldn't really see Aguadilla and all that, Isabela. No. So we don't know, because we didn't go there.
As a nurse, what were you able to, how do you feel about what you were able to accomplish in your 10 days?
I think that I could have done more, but afterwards it's like you're trying to help them, and a lot of them couldn't have medicine because the pharmacies were down. But if they didn't have water, you know, we could give them anything, but if they don't have water and they're drinking water out of streams and creeks and getting leptospirosis, how do you say that? They were getting bacteria, right? Mm-hmm. And we thought we were going to get that, right? And then we had to teach them how to put the 6 drops of bleach in a gallon of water, shake it up, let it sit for half an hour, and then that would be good to drink, because they were just getting water from wherever they saw water. And that's what hurt the most, that knowing that there was probably water sitting on a tarmac or sitting in a pier, and they don't have that water.
They need more of those filtration systems where, you know, it can filter seawater or river water. They really need
But Israel
more,
said
more
they were going to do a filtration. Israeli government is going to put
one inside the Coliseum. But I'm saying they need a lot more. They need, and every time they need them.
David, what was your impression of the mood of the folks, the mood of the people?
Well, I remember we traveled to this town. I forgot the name of the town. Something Alta. That's where
we
went to
the. When we went to with the nurses to pick up food and water.
I think that was Rio Grande.
No, that was close to Caguas.
Something Alta or something. I forgot. But then, you know, because the nurse have a GoFundMe page, so we raised money and we spent about, say, over $3,000, $4,000 in a supermarket buying supplies, water, food, canned stuff, beans. And then we set up, we go to that town, and the neighbor would know that we was coming. Whether, I don't know how, but they know. They knew. So we set up a lot of stations at this missionary, at this church. You know, the station for water, station for bleach, station for beans, you know, things like that. And then the whole neighborhood came out. And I'm talking about people, a lot of people in a line with a bag. And
we ran out of stuff also. And then we could only give people, let's say,
it hurts when you have to give a family one bottle of water.
And
as you give it to them, they start drinking it and they're sharing it with their little kids and stuff. And those things hurt my heart. I teared up. I couldn't.
And one of the things that hurt me the most also, like he said, that was the same day we went out. We went out to an orphanage.
Yes,
and
kids,
delivered some stuff,
toys and stuff
to
like
the
that.
Kids, I mean,
so you know the people,
sad, you know?
Yeah, the people over there, they're sad.
They need more. They need help.
But yet they're proud because with what little water they had, or they will go to the streams and they will wash their clothes. And you know what came back in style there? The washboard. Did you see them?
Oh,
there?
Yeah, the washboards. They were selling washboards. They came back in style.
And they will go to the river and wash their clothes. And we set up like a little triage center. And it was right across the street from the church. And I said, come right now. There's a nurse and a doctor. They're going to be able to see. And they say, wait a minute, I'll be right there. They came dressed up in their Sunday best. All nice and clean. And it's like you saw them, but you saw proud people. That's what I saw.
All right. As you all say, it was tough, and you're all willing to go back. So the experience, I assume this means that you were moved considerably by this experience.
Life-changing,
yes.
Life-changing, yes, for sure.
I saw my dirty sidewalks, because, you know, New York has, and I said, thank you, God, for my dirty sidewalks. Thank you, God, for my light. I turned the light on and off. I just thank God for everything, my bed, because I know that I left people behind. And I feel guilty if I do something like I did my eyebrows, and I felt guilty sitting there that I have this time to do my eyebrows, and the people of Puerto Rico don't. But not everybody, because the malls were full, right?
Mm-hmm.
That mall was
There's
full.
Money. There's money flowing in Puerto Rico in the malls.
In San Juan.
In San Juan.
Across the street at the mall, yeah.
Over there. They're getting a lot of help in San Juan.
Yep.
But there's little towns over there that need so much help. There's no way to even get to them.
When you think about the lack of electricity, when you think about how much we depend on electricity now, and that it's been over a month, that folks have not had electricity. It's a whole nother century you're in. You're taking a trip back to the past, and it ain't easy to rebuild on that.
I went to a nursing housing, and they had their lights turned on from 8 to 10, and then they will have lights turned on from 2 to 4. These are older folks, and you know what they told me would break my heart? Oh, I have to go to bed early because there's nothing to do. Then they would miss doctor's appointments because they can't come back and not have the elevator working. So that broke my heart, too, because we're wondering why they can't have the lights on. So we would try to advocate as little as we could do. Please, why don't you keep the lights on? So while we were there, we were supposed to leave at 4. But we tried to stay a little longer, knocking on doors so they could have light for an extra hour. You know, so little things like that broke my heart. And they didn't have no lights in the stairwell, so they tried to navigate that. They would fall down the stairs, and we saw a couple of them with stitches in their head because they will try to go down the stairs without light. So we're talking about elderly folks, you know. Maybe the younger people could, but I don't know. I just broke my heart because it's like I want to do so much, but what can I do? Who can I get to help?
We've been talking with
Dave Thomas,
Milton Velez,
Judy Maldonado,
Angel Carballo.
Thank you all very much.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Welcome back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. My next guest is the nation's national affairs correspondent and MSNBC political analyst Joan Walsh, who is now the host of her own show on the radio on WNYC AM, which is kind of a cousin station. It's 8:20 AM. The show is called Sunday Calling. Welcome back, Joan Walsh.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the show. I kind of like the fact that you're on Sunday mornings. This show is on Sunday evenings, so in a way that people can just sort of stay in touch with correct thinking people and smart people. And how did this come about?
We can bracket their day.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Well, some people at WNYC were thinking about a very important anniversary coming up, which is coming up November 8th, as you know. And WNYC did a lot of great programming around the election last year, including a show called Indivisible. I'm so used to print being read.
Wow, listeners.
Audience, listener. I know I've got listeners now.
That's right, you
listener do. Listener participation. And they wanted to do something similar. So we began talking about it a few months ago, and the election kept creeping up on us. So we launched on Sunday, October 29th. And so now we've got two shows under our belt. It's conceived of as a four-week, you know, let's hang out and talk about what happened last year and also what's happening right now.
And how's it going? And might there be more?
Right now we're looking at it as four shows. If it takes off, if there's popular demand, I'm sure we'll consider doing more. But, we're halfway through. And I think the real challenge, we've kind of talked about it, is, you know, consider it your news brunch, you know, have a cup of coffee or a mimosa, whatever your preference is. And let's talk about the week together and try to make sense of it. And, you know, for all that we conceived of it as, talk about the big issues show, news just creeps up, you know. So we were planning the first show, and we, you know, had everything locked in by Friday, and then came news of the indictments, of Mueller having already brought indictments. And so suddenly you have to talk about, the breaking news.
Right.
On the first morning, Donald Trump tweeted, and you know, one of my things in print, on TV, talking to my friends, is just like, do we have to cover every tweet? So at first, I resisted reading them on the air, and then my producer told me I was being an idiot. So I read them. So you know, conceiving of it as a place where we try to get above the news and look at what matters, because the news environment, as you know, is just punishing. Just so much is coming at us. How do you pause and take stock of that? And honestly, you know, having listeners helps me.
I do find that radio is a very cool medium. Every once in a while, I'll get a note from someone who was driving in their car and heard me and heard the show and heard the issue. And, and people are never shy about sharing their opinions. But it's a different experience. Radio is a different experience from everything else. And I think that it's a powerful one. And I'll tell you, it gets very frustrating when you are going through the channels, especially on the AM dial. There seems to be a lot of folks with some very absurd thoughts on the AM dial. And it's nice to know that there is a rational, sane voice who is going to get us through the Sunday morning Donald Trump tweets, and that voice is yours. This week was tough. This week was, for as someone who was at Ground Zero on 9/11, you know, 17 years ago, 16 years ago, I was on a conference call and I heard the shots down on West Street. I didn't know what that was about, but I knew that there were shots. And then I saw people running, and I saw people running towards Stuyvesant High School, and that was quite frightening. And I thought that perhaps there was something going on at Stuyvesant. But that view of folks running and that kind of panic, which I had not seen in 16 years, was and now we have, again, another attack in New York City, and you know, within blocks from the site of 9/11. So it was a very tough week for New Yorkers.
Yeah, it really was. As you know, I was down there too, even though I live in Harlem, and just coincidentally happened to be a few blocks away. And you know, that sense of having no idea what was happening and hearing the early reports, you know, being all over the place. He had the gun. He was shooting. He was driving. And the fact that it was so close to Stuyvesant, I mean, you know, any parent just knows what it feels like to think about it being there, you know. But now we have a president who has already perhaps compromised the man's ability to have a fair trial in this country by tweeting that he deserves the death penalty. We have a president who threatened to throw him into Guantanamo when, in fact, he can't do that. And so the sense of, you know, you look to your leaders, and obviously President Obama was great at this, for kind of a sense of calm and, again, a sense of what matters. And, you know, we don't have that anymore. And it was particularly disturbing, you know, as a New Yorker to find out the president hadn't called Governor Cuomo or Mayor de Blasio. He didn't express any personal concern for either the victims or just what the city was going through. You know, even though it's supposedly his city too, like literally he used to tell us he owned it. And he's the president of the entire United States. We don't get the same care, concern. I don't even know if we got prayers that day, Chris. And that's just a little bit sad.
Do you think
too.
That's because he's so – do you think he drives that train, or is he so insulated in – does he have such an insulated White House that people aren't thinking about that kind of thing or bringing it to him? Any kind of idea of what the thinking is like when such a thing happens and there is no – communication between
I have no I really have I would just be speculating. I just think, you know, in some ways it's the easiest and most obvious thing that you would do as president. Not necessarily easy, it might be painful, but easy to just know, this is, you know, can I help, sorry this happened, can I help, what do you need, even if the answer is, you know, nothing right now. I can't believe that no one told him to do it. I can't believe he didn't think of it himself. I just have no idea. But, you know, all the normal assumptions that we make about a president as a person or the White House as an institution are out the window with this president and this White House.
There seems to be on two fronts, in thinking about how the media reacts to Trump, there seems to be a huge focus on the cultural side of things. You know, Trump tweets, Kelly tweets, it becomes this huge media suck. And I get concerned about the, and I always want to keep it this way, because I think that there are a lot of people who feel sometimes that the media is overreacting to some of this other stuff, more along cultural lines. But this policy stuff really makes me nervous. This tax, it seems to me that this tax policy is really going to hurt New York if it was allowed to go through as is. And that it really is yet another example of a 30, 40-year idea of trickle-down economics where we take care of the rich folks and they'll take care of us. And this focus on, you know, oh, can you believe how unpresidential he acts sometimes, distracts from these are the policies he wants to put through, and they're scary.
I think that is true. Although sometimes he's announcing policy on his Twitter feed, so you have to pay some attention to it. But right, the outrages, the common outrages over whether he's acting presidential or, you know, his feuds with NFL players, et cetera, black NFL players, let's just say it.
Right.
Take up a lot of the air, and you know they matter because I think his racial attitudes really matter, and I know you agree.
Right.
But it's also again this you know set of distractions, but also he you know sends out these messages to his supporters, and that keeps them happy, and they ignore the fact that these tax cuts are mainly going to the super rich, and that again you know after trying this under George W. Bush and having this trickle-down policy not work, you know, again, we're going to do it again and expect something different. So explaining tax policy is hard. Explaining his tweets can be easier.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I it's really this is a show for, you know, working people, and there is a real attack now on working folks and the unions that represent them, and it is very hard to get out what is at stake here and what is at risk, and that can be very frustrating. As I know I've shared this before, the frustration, but it just seems even as time goes by that the focus on policy is very difficult to maintain.
It is, but, you know, people defeated their attempt to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. You know, people can mobilize, and they'll have lots of power. They may have lots of powerful allies, depending on how this tax bill comes out, to defeat this tax bill as well. So, you know, it is dispiriting because we're certainly not talking about anything that's going to help working people. And there is so much focus on the culture war stuff. But at the same time, you know, I think we've done a decent job fighting the worst of these proposals. The things that are hard to fight, though, are, you know, the lower level appointments that are getting made and the, you know, people who don't believe in climate change over at the EPA. And, you know, he and his agency heads, his secretary, you know, cabinet secretaries have so much control over so much that affects working people, and there's really nothing we can do about that until, you know, going to the ballot in 2018 and 2020. So yeah, it's frustrating.
I knew this time was going to go by very quickly. I look forward to the next time you're on. Joan Walsh is the nation's national affairs correspondent and MSNBC political analyst. The show is called Sunday Calling. It's on WNYC AM 820 Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock for the next couple of weeks and possibly beyond. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
That's just about all the time we have for this show. This Tuesday, November 7th, is Election Day. If you want to volunteer to help get out the vote, call 212-815-1550. We've talked about the Constitutional Convention. It's now time to do something about it. And remember, if you have any comments about today's show or any of our shows, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. That's stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We appreciate your feedback. Rudy Orozco is the producer. Engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.